Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
We finally made it to Game of the Year.
A whole other year, living in isolation. Also, Josh Brown.
Hello there.
We're gathered in person to do the end of the podcast. End, it might be the end of the podcast, depending on how this goes. We're going to do the best game of 2021. Now, each of us have three or two main candidates we're going to be putting up and seeing what the other members think. Now, we don't know what each other thinks, although I know exactly what Josh Brown's going to say for one of his. I also know what Ben Roy's is, to be honest. We'll say what all of our candidates are for the actual best game of 2021, and then we'll just see where the next half hour takes us, as we must agree on something before the recording button is pushed again to stop the podcast. So, my top three for the year, in order, number one is Metroid Dread. That's what I think is the game of the year. Next after that is Sable, and after that is Resident Evil Village.
Ooh.
There we go.
I'm just throwing
Chris
that up
Redfield
there.
Punching his way through the village.
If I really start thinking about which games I absolutely loved playing through, the only thing that I hate about Resident Evil is the way the story goes, which doesn't get in the way of how much I enjoyed it to that point. So it's going to be Resident Evil Village as my third. Josh Brown, what are your candidates?
Easy peasy. We've got Disco Elysium at the very top. We've got Death Stranding PS5 edition. And we've got Spider-Man remastered as well.
The president says there is a new mandate. You cannot have Disco Elysium. It was on PC.
What a shame.
Yeah.
There's a thing called Space and Time. And also, it came out not this year.
Otherwise, Hades would be 2021's game of the year.
Carry on. I know exactly what my top two are. And it is number one, of course, Returnal. Number two, Resident Evil Village. But the third spot, man... Like, that's an elusive spot.
It is.
And I'm going to have to settle right now because I don't think it'll get a shout otherwise. Deathloop. That's going to be my number three.
Not the Forgotten City.
The Forgotten City. One, I know it's going to get represented by you. And two, it wouldn't be in my top three. Maybe it might crack top five, but if I put the Forgotten City in there, I'm going to have to put Mundane in there. And then we open a whole other box of worms. So I'm going to go Returnal, Resident Evil, Deathloop.
If Forgotten City wasn't as absolutely banana sandwich in the eyes, I would be championing every part of that game. Ben Roy, what are your candidates for the best 2021 game?
I feel like I've been doing it differently to because, like, I slowly throughout the year, I craft it, like, I add things to the list, and, like, I feel so sad at leaving so many games off, but my top three sounds basic for me. It's,
Is it Resident Evil? Is it?
Resident Evil 2 remake and Resident Evil 3 remake were both not my games of the year those years, so I'll have you can sit on that. Number three, you know what? I think the Forgotten City... Yeah, number three is Hitman 3. Number two is the Forgotten City.
Wow!
It just went up on my list there again. And number one... Resident Evil Village.
So we can largely... I mean, I've got Resident Evil Village at my number three because, for me, the story side of it completely falls apart. And I think that although the gameplay is very, very solid, structure-wise... there's quite a few things. If I'm gonna deny this the number one spot, as much as it'll probably end up being the thing that we can only agree on. But for Village, I was massively disappointed that Lady Dimitrescu was out the way in the first 20-25 minutes. I was massively disappointed by the entire back third of that game, which isn't to say that the Chris Redfield section isn't brilliant, because playing as him is great, but the actual explanation for what was happening with him, considering the marketing and the main push of that game, is the mystery, is what's going on, is why he shot Mia, Ethan's wife, and why he kidnapped your daughter Rose, and what's really going on with all of that. And to not do spoilers, I still think that the explanation for that is hilariously naff in a bad way. And you can say that old school Resident Evil has always had parts of hilariously naff stuff. And this is the franchise where people punch boulders, etc. Or Jill Valentine comes back from the dead, or whatever she is. But the way that they did it in Village was the thing that made me go, I am embarrassed I ever cared about this.
I just think it's just Resident Evil, man. I'm not trying to shoot at you here, but I think you've taken the game into a wrong aspect of, like, almost put it in the line of like a Last of Us, where the story is going to be.
It's not. It's not
comprehensive and great. But like,
it's obviously not that.
Yeah, but it's like, I just, nothing. Yeah, Chris could have said some things, but he's also just trying to. I think in his mind, he's like, just stay there and get out of the way. Just go away. Like some people, like, just stay there, and then they come along, and then it all goes wrong or whatever. I'm not going to spoil the story, even though the game's however many months old, like almost a year old.
Wild, yeah.
But I get everyone's criticisms for the Lady Dimitrescu stuff, because I feel like they showed off what was the best part of the game really early on.
It made it seem like that was more of the game overall.
Yeah, and when you think, it's weird because the game feels really short to me now, because the amount of times I ran through that thing in the end with like unlimited weapons and just murking everything I see. But that first experience, and like sort of the first, sort of like when you enter the village for the first time, and even though you... I don't know if they should have shown the sorry from in the trailer. Yeah, right. I think they should have shown Chris maybe in the trailer, but that moment would have been even more like hitting if you had just gone into it, sort of thing.
It's just for me, it gets too repetitive in the structure. It's sort of like, you know, you're in the new area. There's a big bad following boss creature that's going to come after you for a bit, or there's something you're building up to the boss fight that you're going to have. Rinse, repeat four times or whatever it is until you get to the ending. And then there's the big, crazy, over-the-top action mech sequence towards the end, which was fun in the moment, but I was like, what even is this? And then coupled with the story disappointments and the way that, like I said, they don't pay off the setup. And it's not that it needs to be a grade A Naughty Dog thing, but it needed to be something. And I didn't think it was anything at all.
It's like, how did Heisenberg know half the stuff he was talking about? It's weird. Like this, and they are obviously trying to repeat beats from 7 as well. Like having everyone at the table and having everyone in like the first little meeting and sort of things like that. But then you have certain sections in a house, in a basement in a house, where it's like, wow, that ruined me. And when that ruined me, I couldn't wait for everyone else to be ruined by it and see all these like reaction faces as people play the game and like listening to YouTube. Sort of like, I did the bit in the house. Oh,
that's the thing. That whole bit, I can't think what the Beneviento house, where they absolutely eat Silent Hill's lunch in front of them. Like they're just like, this is literally what you guys should be doing. You know, and that part is hands down one of the best moments of the year, being a genuinely spooky thing with the whole weird mutated fetus thing coming after you. That stuff's done very well. We haven't heard from Josh Brown in a little while. Where have you landed on Resident Evil?
I love it, man. I love it. And I'm listening to all the criticisms and all the pluses here. And the only criticism I have is that it's not in VR. That's the only one thing that I'm...
Not enough stuff is, mate.
...upset about, you know. This game
Resident Evil 4 was this year.
It was. I haven't got that. I haven't been able to play it. The only thing... No. I've completely lost my train of thought there with that great bit of banter there, Scott.
Too good.
The thing with Resident Evil Village is that it made me want to play all the other Resident Evil games, and I did. So being able to compare them like so close together, I think it's the last one like this that they can do, because like Roy said, you know, it's so indebted to the structure of 7. It's obviously taken huge influence from Resident Evil 4 in terms of the combat, in terms of the mechanical pacing and stuff. But it doesn't matter for this one in particular, because those things are good, and it brings them to this first-person, semi-open-world Resident Evil experience in such a, you know, just polished way. And yes, I understand the story concerns, but I'm definitely in Camp Benroy when I hold this up to Code Veronica X, which is like...
That was 20 years ago!
No, but I mean, in terms of the Resident Evil canon, I understand why you would compare it to modern-day storytelling, but when I'm putting
I'm not,
it in...
I'm not. Carry on, sorry.
I've got also...
when you watch the new Resident Evil film,
You're like Code Veronica X, do you, Josh Brown? I just want to say, get ready for some Code Veronica X in Resident Evil. Welcome to Raccoon City!
Code Veronica X is haunting me this year. It's just when I put the story up towards that, like, even when I saw the first trailer of, you know, Chris shooting Mia and stuff, I knew they weren't going to do anything with it, so I wasn't invested in that way. Maybe I've just fallen out of love with stories this year because I'm the same about Hitman 3. Like, I look at that story.
Well, you were skipping cutscenes in Hitman 3.
Not in Hitman 3. In Hitman 2, I did.
Right.
Hitman 3, I watched the story, but I didn't care for the story. You know, I'm not saying it was, like, good and stuff. It's just mechanically and from a mythological perspective, Resident Evil Village works. And I've always been there for Resident Evil, for the mythology, not the storytelling. It would be cool if they got the storytelling right, but it doesn't make me like it any less because I love everything else around it.
I was proud of myself when we were talking about this a little while ago. I was like, these are more lore games than story. I was like, you know what, Reverend? That's actually quite
but
a
then
good
even
thing.
Because,
like... Mad men like me will do like hours upon hours of videos on YouTube, like, oh, the lore of Hitman.
We've got our own one on the channel that you put together.
Yeah, and it popped off, the Hitman thing popped off again when Hitman 3 came out. But like, I was thinking about it, like, Agent 47 is a character, right? But at the same time, he's not. And
well, they try to make him one. I mean,
he's a bald person.
That's why 3 is massively disappointing, because they did all the work in 1 and 2.
He shouldn't have. Then you get into dangerous territory with the films where Timothy Oliphant was trying to make...
That's a train wreck.
Trying to make 47 the character. But like going into like Resident Evil, where it's where I have some sort of like level of like, it's going to be this. And I think 7 was a weird one where they were basically being sort of like a hillbilly horror film, which I think that's why a lot... That's why it's the best selling in Resident Evil game. Like, so many people gravitated to horror hillbillies in a way. Like, there's so many aspects like Chainsaw Massacre and all that sort of thing. But with 8, it does feel like, the more we talk about it, it does feel like it was like this is a best of. And I see some people reductively going, it's just doing 4 in first person. Well, it's not. You're wrong.
No, that's why it's not that at all.
Because I'm not saying anyone here, or otherwise I would have already shanked you, because we're in real life now. This is why we're doing Game of the Year.
The doors are locked.
But 8 did it. 8, I feel like, has brung so much of Resident Evil back in a way, and they did a great work with Lady Dimitrescu. Mm. And I can't wait for them to have fun with DLC, because obviously they're going to do more Dimitrescu stuff.
I think...
Because the 7 DLC was... you had all the band tapes that you play, and at the end of Zoe, there was some excellent DLC in it where it actually capped off 7's story even more. Mm. And you went back and saw how the family... got done in, so you might see how the village get done in.
So the DLC is called.
Yeah, how did everyone get done in? Like, oh, you might see all the, like, Pervy Oswald, like, trying to get with some people. I was going to spoil part of the story.
No, so that was the thing I wanted to touch about, because you mentioned that there's 2 things I need to qualify my story point. It has nothing to do with modern storytelling. It has nothing to do with anything other than Resident Evil 8. It has everything to do with the way that they advertised it, and they advertised it as having something. I view every game in a vacuum. I don't not bring anything else in terms of, like, oh, it should have lived up to XYZ on the periphery. Like, it's absolutely the way that they marketed that game. If Chris Redfield, ex-main character from franchise, shoots the wife of the new character, I'm going to go in going, I wonder why he did that.
See, I go into that self, and I don't, I'm not saying that's invalid or anything, but I go into that going, well, she's bad. Well, she's going to be evil. Of course she is.
She needs to be explained. In the previous game, she cut your hand off and stuff. But I saw that trailer. That's not Mia.
Yeah, it's him.
And that was my thought. It was like, that is not Mia. Or there's going to be other stuff to it. And this is going to be the end of the game. Like,
right.
There was no way I was like, they're going
to...
like.
But you were invested. You wanted to know.
Yeah, but it's also like Resident Evil don't just kill characters. It's not like a Game of Thrones where, like, oh, you're dead now.
Well,
sorry.
Exactly, right? So this is the first time they've done that. They've never had a marketing campaign for a Resident Evil. I guess you could argue that 5 had it a bit, because they had the whole thing with Jill coming back, then they spoiled it in the magazine reveal, whatever it is. But they've never had a really on-the-nose marketing campaign saying...
She never did come back after that.
Well, yeah. But saying, like, you know, this is the scenario. Like, we're going to get you in on this scene. And literally have Ethan going, like, why? Like, what the hell's going on? And it's like, I'm not saying that I was invested in that in the same way that I was wondering what was going to happen with Joel and Ellie, but like at the same time, I think that they set that up and they completely miss it.
I get it is kind of thrown away for most of the game, where it's like, now go to Mummy for a bit and then go to the Frog Man and then run away from some werewolves. And I
that's like fun, schlocky Resident Evil
kind of
stuff.
It. It's like maybe it just got too serious at some points when
it can still be schlocky, but just explain the point you have. It literally gets to a point where the character Chris is just like, yeah, I just did that.
What you should do, you should have modded the game and given Chris the baby head and given the baby the Chris head.
We should also talk about, again, I'm going to skirt away from spoilers, but there's something towards the end that is another massive plot point, something to do with Ethan, the way that they sort of recontextualize what happened in 7. I think both of you guys really liked that.
That was well done, yeah.
Right, so that was another thing where I was just like, oh, what even? What even are we doing?
Really? That's something they've never done before, those things like that. They've never really had they've had direct continuations, obviously, like in the first couple of games, but... They almost become splintered different worlds now, and how then you go back to 7, and you think about that. Like, actually, that makes sense, but I want to know what Josh was saying because I keep jumping into the Resident Evil chat.
It's all right. I think this was always going to be interesting from a story perspective because Ethan was such a strange non-character in 7 by design. You know, you were supposed to put yourself in his shoes, literally. But in this one, it looked like they were going to flesh him out. And like Roy said, you know, they'd never done before a sequel like this, a mainline sequel where you carry the character over. Obviously, characters have appeared, but you don't go from Leon in 2 to Leon in 3. You know, it's completely switching things up. This one was Ethan in 7, Ethan in 8. And what they do towards the end with that character, having played 7 literally right before it as well, I thought that was cool. That makes me care about this wet blanket of a character so much more than I did before. And it worked in a way that Resident Evil hasn't on a storytelling perspective before. And like I said, I don't think...
So they do care about story.
Well, they care about lore and they care about characters, and they make Ethan an interesting character with that turn, in my opinion.
My thing was, because in 7 it is, you know, going into the bigger family, trying to get Mia back, and then obviously there's the whole thing. Is it Zoe who's the other character? Mia's sister?
Zoe and Mia in 7.
Yeah, so there's the whole thing that plays out with them. But my point is that like a lot of the big drive of 7 is can we make it out of this alive? Together. And so when 8 is immediately shooting that person, like I said, default, I'm going to care. Not on a massive level, but to me, it mattered a lot. And so when it completely comes up short, I mean, it's still my number 3 of the year because of the gameplay and the atmosphere and the enemies and everything else.
I think that we could have had a bit more of a darker Chris because I like the idea of Chris, someone fighting for so long that they're just like, yeah, screw it. I'm just going to kill it before it happens. Like, the best way I can be is like X-Men, where the Sentinels start killing people that will give birth to mutants. That sort of thing. Where like I'm gonna do you in now, sort of thing. That's where I thought it might have gone. Like Chris gets a bit more happy go Carlos-y towards the end, but it still worked for me.
Let's switch gears and talk about Returnal, because that was something that ever since Josh reviewed it, you were like, this is definitely my game of the year. It feels like this is going to be my game of the year. And I think that it is a game of the year candidate. I genuinely can't believe it was snubbed at the Game Awards in the top 5. Because I feel like as a robust clockwork mechanism of a game, it's perfect in that regard.
Yeah.
Like in terms of what they're going for. I think it's very, very cruel, but it's intentional. Like they want you to be put in a certain headspace. They want you to fight against a series of mechanics that are bombarding you with projectiles. They want you to reset. They want you to lose 45 minutes to way more than that per run. So you'll go again. And it's like, will you go again? Will you finish it? We don't care if you won't. That's the structure. Get used to it. And over time, enough people talked about wanting the save system in it, and where initially they said that was just the way that they designed it. But they did end up putting in one checkpoint. So you can bank a time. You can bank a save, which deletes itself once you resume. But that was the only thing that we got in regards to making it quote-unquote easier. Why should Returnal be Game of the Year?
Because it's, in my opinion, the only game where there are very few mechanical shortcomings. Like, I look at that game, and everything is more or less perfect and working as intended. Like, I'm sure you guys will have your issues with it, but for me, the way that game is structured, the way that game comes together mechanically with the way you progress through the missions, it just nails a sense of, I know you call it cruel, Scott, but for me, it nailed a sense of empowerment as I went.
Right.
That the roguelike...
You're also an absolute Adonis, though. I think you got through it in three runs.
I think you were overselling my skills.
You finished Hades in one go.
I will take it. It was a game that got its hooks into me, and I was never taken out by any dodgy design decisions. I was never kind of finishing a run.
You went shot from the wall or shot from off screen.
I wasn't finishing runs thinking, I don't want to play that again. I was finishing runs at like 2 a.m. thinking, I'm going to jump in right now and see how far I can get again. Uh-huh. It was one of those that just lived in my brain. I loved every second I was playing with it. I think, Housemarque, great when it comes to combat anyway. This is their biggest game by far. And they managed to transfer the things that they do well in a sort of 2D space over to a proper 3D over-the-shoulder shooter. I think the world itself is incredibly imaginative. I loved... following Celine on her journey and following the dead Celines that you find strewn around the place and listening to their audio tapes and stuff. It's just the imagery is evocative, the gameplay is stellar, and I will stop talking about it one day, but today is not the day, it seems.
Today is not that day. Ben Roy, what do you think about Returnal being Game of the Year?
I platinumed that game.
You did?
And it was very testing towards the end, but that obviously the RNG, but I will go with you on the crawl thing, because I'm so glad there's like no one in the room when I'm playing this game. The language that comes out of my mouth when some of the things literally spawn on you. They've got axes and they have like AoE attacks, and then they've got launchers, and then
the screen's just a massive firework death.
It's the warrior sort of, like, I can't describe. They got like hammerhead shark sort of style heads, and they're always in your face, and they're always. And sometimes you get three of them. You'll go to a certain challenge when you have to go through. And then sometimes that challenge room's a bit more chill when you get the more like sort of like beasts. And then you get them, you're, oh God, just go away for a minute. And why I feel like I can forgive the game in so many other aspects, but when you start a run again and you got a crappy pistol and the game's like, have a shotgun, I don't want a shotgun.
No.
The shotguns in that, most guns in that game, I hate. I want the assault rifle,
or
I want an upgraded pistol, or I want the is it the Holoseeker?
Holoseeker
is
the tracing one.
Especially when it's got and then when you get like the, I don't even know how you ever get like, you can get this portal thing that spawns and starts zapping.
They're all just
stuff
random
well.
Attachments to the weapons.
Yeah, like that, when you get that sort of loadout, you're good. But then you'll have like seven of those warriors just in you and like, mate, just go away for a moment. Like, I'm going to call the police.
The thing with me is that I had a mental breakdown with this game, because I was just like, because
one size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I have a whole thing with, like, Adam Sessler talked about this years ago about, like, you know, fundamentally when you get past, I think it's 28, might be 27, your hand-eye coordination gets less. It fundamentally gets less as a human being. So he said back in 2005, 2006, Adam Sessler, back when he was on G4, I know that's going again now, but it was back then, that at some point there'll be a great game that he fundamentally can't beat. That he fundamentally can't finish. He fundamentally can't experience the best parts of that game because his body won't let him, his mind won't let him, his brain won't process the information fast enough, and that terrifies him to some degree. And I was like, that's such a fascinating point. And so every time something like this happens, whether it be, I mean, I haven't got stuck on a game like this in a long time, but something like a Sekiro that just pummels you into the ground, and you're just like, oh my God, I have to keep going deeper and deeper and deeper to, like, keep going. And Returnal was that game where it was just, like, smushing you into the floor, and you get nothing for, like, an hour or an hour and a half of a run that you've just done. And just going like, well, get up and do it again then. Do it again. Or you've just wasted that time.
That nerd needs to get good.
Yeah, you need, literally, like, you need to get good. Or you should have dodged that thing that came through the wall and killed you. And I'm just like, I had a horrible time with it.
The AOE shockwaves, and sometimes like, have I got away from it? And then one just gets through and scrapes. And they never hardly kill you. They just take all your health off. And then some little monkey comes on and poke, and then you get like,
the thing that I'll point out as well is that I never look up guides. Well, I'll look up a puzzle guide sometimes if I get stuck, but for the most part, just play through a game. In Returnal, I got to such a point where I was like, I must be missing something. Like, I must be just missing something. I keep dying. You guys are getting through it. Josh had finished it. You played it after me, but then you got through it a lot faster than I did. And I found out that game's combat nigh on breaks if you just circle strafe around stuff. Because the main problem that I was doing wrong was I was trying to evade forward, backwards. I was trying to jump. I was trying to comprise X other, you know, insert game combat style, whether it be Halo, Titanfall, whatever it is. Name a game. And that's what was cutting me down. Because the way that game tracks you with its different homing energy blast, the different attacks that the enemies do, they track you way better if you're moving in straight forward or backwards. As soon as you start circle strafing, you'll dodge everything. And as soon as I did that, I went, oh, okay. And then I finished it immediately.
Find a good place to grapple onto. And then just, there's some points in certain rooms you can grapple backwards and forwards and avoid the colossal shockwave moves that they do mid.
But after a while, it just becomes like this thing where you equip the Holoseeker, you know, because that's the whole thing, is the way the upgrade system works is you get the best weapon upgrades after using those weapons over time. So you do need to just spend time in the game, unless you're the Adonis Josh Brown and you can manage to get through with a starting pistol or something. Eventually, it'll give you the likes of what Benroy said, where your Seeker Swarm firing machine gun now comes with portals or now comes with a turret. Or whatever, but you end up just firing off the auto-seeking bullets and just not even really thinking about where you're aiming anymore. Just running around, shooting, spending time dodging,
coming towards you.
Just prioritizing evasion over all else, trying to game the system to get through. And I know that if you're just good enough, you'll not have to even think about that stuff. But I think judging by the trophy completion data, and I'll just say my own side of it, where I was just like struggling through it, it became such a slog to even get through that game. So glad I did. But oh my God.
It's interesting what you say there about it becomes more about you just firing the bullets off and you're focusing more on evasion. And
I would argue, spinning, running around.
And I would argue that's definitely by design, just because Housemarque's other games kind of work in the same way, where you're throwing off the Holoseeker. You're absolutely pelting these boys with hundreds of thousands of bullets. You're using portals and stuff. You're pressing the button. But what you need to be focused on is evading. You need to be getting away from these projectiles. And for me, that's very fun, and that's what I really like about the game. Rather than needing pinpoint accuracy above all else, it's about reading the screen, it's about reacting to the screen, and I like the game, I like that in the games that Housemarque makes, and I thought it was translated well over to a 3D space where this game could have been completely illegible, and I'm sure maybe you guys maybe think it is
that
a pass.
It gets like that.
I never thought it was illegible. I thought I could always figure out what was going on, and most importantly, I felt that every single time I died, apart from against those rocket lads in the third biome.
Those cannon things that float around and shoot. Sometimes they just shoot. you just look at, there's a barrage. You might just get away, but then the other one's doing a barrage or another one. And then you've got other cannons that are shooting shockwaves at you. And if you damage them too much, they're going to kamikaze into your mouth.
And and you were saying about like illegibility. There's a bit, the last biome is like smeared in Vaseline. It's an underwater blurry space. And some of the, when you take out the enemies and they explode in that sort of underwater,
there's infinite enemies in that level as well. You've got to kill the host like to make sure you don't have
There's like a big sphere thing that just spawns infinite enemies. But like that gets to a point of just blurry weirdness where I'm just hanging back with the Holoseeker, hoping it's finding its target and eventually getting through. And like that's the thing. So like, yeah, I think Returnal does have flaws. I think that, like I said, the thing is, It has flaws personally. I think it's very cruel. I think that the thing that they've designed is obviously 100% intentional, but they want you to be in such a specific mindset, and they don't mind pummeling you into a fine paste until you get there.
I will say, after I've been in, and this is, if you're going into this game and you're not sure and you don't want to be tortured, you can upload that save to the cloud and you can bring it back to yourself.
That's madness.
And I did that after I beat the game, to when I was doing a few of the cipher runs, because I was like, you can get out. You can get in the bin now. Now I've beaten you. Now I'm going to go and teach you a lesson, thing or two. Mr., Mrs., Ms., just everything, Jim Ryan.
I will say that, Josh, you mentioned empowerment. And there was I definitely, when I finally beat Ophion, the final boss, that was such a sigh. Ornstein and Smile was the last time something tested me like this. That was back in 2011 or whatever. But when I finally beat the final boss and I knew that I'd done it, like obviously there's a secret ending, you can go and collect a bunch of moon fragments or whatever they're called, sun fragments, and get another ending, which I've done that too. I haven't seen the final credits sequence, but I got those items. But the first time you actually get some credits, the first time you beat Ophion, and you have that, you approach it differently, you have that feeling of like, well, I can dominate all this now.
Yeah.
And then you sort of run around, you know all the patterns, you've kind of got them in you, you've gotten used to countering so much or evading so much, and that you can just cakewalk that game. Cakewalking that game and getting all those sun fragments was the one time I was like, this is phenomenal. This is game of the year feeling. Because all that paced stuff before is now this incredible feeling now. And then I died again to the final boss. And I was like, I don't even need to. That will feel Halo is out now. So
I reckon that it wasn't nominated in a lot of game of the year stuff, because I just reckon a lot of people just didn't. And I'm not sure, but they just didn't beat it because this game demands so much. You know, so like, and it's not like Souls where Sekiro's hard as hell, right? Mm-hmm. But you don't start the entire game again.
That's the main thing that holds it back, is its attitude towards replaying segments.
And you don't have to do the entire game again, because it's split into like two threes. So it's a three. But it's still such a daunting thing, especially when you're trying to just run back to a certain area and then you get locked into these rooms and now I've got to kill some big thing that's spawning in. But it's like the whole thing of like, we didn't touch on like killing all the grunts before the big thing spawns in, because if you don't let too many of them live, you're just going to get whacked even harder.
I think it has a fundamentally cruel mentality that is intentional, but at the same time, it just asks you to bank sheer time until you have enough weapon upgrades to maybe overcome whatever it is that keeps killing you. And to a lot of people, as is evident by its lack of nominations on stuff, that just seems to not be a worthwhile way to spend your time with this game. But the people who do click with it absolutely love it, because you're lockstep with the mentality that it has, and you can just absolutely love it. And I had a glimpse of that when I finally beat the boss, and I could just cakewalk everything with my giant portal shooting Holoseeker. But for the most part, Returnal was an absolute slog.
Punish me, Daddy.
I forget which of the two games you guys mentioned. We did see Resident Evil Village. We talked about just Returnal. I will quickly mention Metroid Dread. I know you guys haven't finished it, but that will be my number one. I think just very quickly, I think that game is an absolute pristine masterpiece. There's not a pixel out of place in that thing. You could give it to anybody, and they would absolutely love it. It's that 2D Metroidvania formula perfected with the best new age sensibility in regards to the game flow, the way it plays. You can just devour the thing. And it just goes, and the boss battles are the best boss battles of the year. Right next to Returnal, funnily enough, in that regard. It's just an outright recommendable game, and I hope that it gets the Game Awards actual nomination for that thing. But where are you guys at? Do you want to... We can crown Resident Evil Village right now.
We could do. I think it
might actually be that. I think if you hold everything up and you talk about pros and cons, I can levy story stuff at Resident Evil Village, but I definitely had a point, and I think I messaged you guys in the group chat. It was after the Beneviento house, where all that horror stuff had just gone down, and I had my three shotguns on the go. And I was sitting there, and I just I shot, like, it's like a golden pig or something, or like, I mean, it's like a regular colored pig. I forget now. There's a giant hog that's running around. Shot that, and then I picked up some secret thing, and it was in that exact moment where I was just like, this has clicked. This has already clicked very well. I don't know why that pig did it, but it clicked very well. And I just had this moment of like, this is such a pristine flow to this game that I'm completely locked in on.
They could have done the village stuff so badly, and I was scared they were trying to do some open world stuff, and I'm glad they didn't. It was like the hub world, like open hub world, which I kind of like enjoy more. But when I think about it, like, with a lot of Resident Evil games, the last area seems to be the area just like, okay, let's just get through it. Even though I found this last area more scarier than other ones, I think because it's first person. Whereas, like, say, Resident Evil 4, it was just like boring island. But yeah, I can't think of anything else. It was the first thing we... Like, Hitman 3 was obviously the first thing of the year, but it's the first thing in the year where I felt like
quality was coming through, and like even the additions of the adaptive triggers on PS5 like worked for me, and
that machine gun clatters.
Yeah, like I love the addition of Heisenberg and just flesh out more of Chris. I just wish that there's obviously stuff we'll see in a year's time, whatever, like the stuff teased is going to come fruition, like certain things towards the end, like what's going on there. And I think it's so reassuring after, like, you can say this forever, after 6 and then went to 7, and 7 was like, let's make it more of a blanket game and then reintroduce the Resident Evil at the end. Mm-hmm. And this one having the Resident Evil even in more there, just, it's proof that you can have games with such like long lineage and bring new people in, but also have that old stuff there for people like me.
Yeah, I think that going forward, it's going to be very interesting to see how that balance goes. Because like you said, 7 was like, if it was like a meter being filled, at the very end of it is wacky Resident Evil stuff when Jack Baker fully transforms and then Chris comes in, you see the Umbrella logo and stuff. And then this one was full on banana sandwich, we don't care, let's just have fun, big crazy demon bosses and everything else. And I think that maybe that is part of what was so jarring for me, because they seem to have this like story hook, this tone hook beforehand. But overall, if we're talking pound for pound, how much did all three of us enjoy a game this year, the most that those things all cross over and line up is going to be Resident Evil Village.
You know, I want to say as well, you know, obviously I'm a huge Resident Evil fan, you know, talked about this on podcast and videos for years now, but going into this especially, it wasn't a foregone conclusion that this was going to be my favorite game of the year or even in the top five, because when we were looking at the pre-release trailers, you can go back to news videos we did, and I was there saying, this looks a little bit ropey, I don't know why the frame rate is like this.
Do you think it could look better, yeah.
Is it going to be a bit weird? And then obviously when you saw like the Chris and the Mia thing in the trailers, like I said before, I had the reaction of, well, I know where that's going to go, that's not going to surprise me. And then getting into the opening and you get to the village and it's kind of opened up, and I was like, I don't know if this is clicking. So it actually had a lot of hurdles to get over to get to this spot, and the fact that it did it and smashed all of my worries before release, I think is testament to how quality of a product it is. I think it's a game that we can look at and say it's the winner by default, which I think undersells it a little bit, because it is good and it is a quality
consensus
product.
Vote.
Yes, it is. Oh, totally. I mean, in this table, you know, only Roy had it
but
as
I think
top,
but I feel like most people this year, because it has been a weird year for games. I don't agree with the sentiment that it's been a waste of a year. I don't agree with the sentiment at all that there's not worthwhile stuff to play. I think I could give you like 20-odd games that you should go play. But I do think that it'll get that consensus thing where the most people had the most fun with Resident Evil Village. Like if you sort of drew a line through the middle of all their expectations and the ways that it paid off.
Yeah. I just wanted to jump in. Like, I've just mentioned the top three basic picks, but like It Takes Two is in my top 10. So like, games like that, like Halo Infinite, I think is phenomenal. Plays phenomenal. And I can't wait to get into the campaign.
Oh, campaign will be out by the time we put this out.
I really enjoyed the medium. I know some people didn't like it, but I
love
really
the
thought the medium really hit a certain point in me, which I really enjoyed. Oddworld Soulstorm was punishing, but I loved it. Deathloop, it depends where the wind's blowing, wherever I'm really into Deathloop anymore. And yeah, I felt like it was there's a vast variety. Like I don't know. I think It Takes Two is my most surprising game. And I just want to say, like, there's all these other games we could go on forever about and talk about and say how boring Outriders is. But at the same time, I think even if it's a Resident Evil game and like, oh, it's memorized every game, but I think it's legit. It holds its own as what should be like a game of the year sort of thing.
Like I said, I think it's incredibly solid. I'm very curious what happens at the Game Awards themselves. And we've got a couple more pods to come before the rest of the year closes out. So we'll see how the coming weeks go. We're going to pre-record some stuff. I don't even know when this one's going out, but we'll figure it out. For now, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylorford, joined by Ben Roy-Turner.
Try Roy-Turner and try Resident Evil.
Good. And Josh Brown.
Play Mundon.
Yeah, just go play Metroid for the love of the Lord himself. We'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mundon's good.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health
right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.